Today's program is brought to you by Korin, supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. For more information, visit korin.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hello, welcome to Japan Eats. I'm your host Akiko Katayama, a food writer and the director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deeper understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from a studio at Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every deli and supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi ramen izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is still a mystery for many people, and I try to demystify it in this program with my cool guests. And my guest today is Masahiro Urushido, who is a mixologist and the bar manager at Sucks on the Parole, which is a great new American restaurant in East Village. And it has a huge bar space filled with lots of great energy. And Japanese cocktail culture is known for being unique and different from American cocktail culture. And Masa has worked in both countries as bartender. So today, we'll discuss what is unique about Japanese cocktail culture, how Masa expresses in his cocktails in New York, and he won 2014 Chivas Regal Global Master, which made him one of the best bartenders of the world, and much, much more. Hello, Masa. Welcome to Japan Eats.
Hello.
So,
thank you for having me, Akiko-san.
Looking forward to it. So, first of all, when and why did you come to the States?
I moved to New York in 2008 to go to school, to attend a college. Original intention was to study both English and hospitality management.
So you are in the right path already. Okay. And so how did you get into the world of cocktails?
I worked when I was 19. I got my first job in restaurant and the bar in Tokyo. The restaurant was run by famous restaurateur Hiro Shinkawa. And then it was very fine dining.
Really suddenly decided to work in a restaurant dining.
I was lucky that I got the job at the first place because before I had, no experience in the restaurant and even something like that, you know, high-end restaurant. Simply, I was just delivering pizza and working in a few karaoke bars before, but, it was quite stretch and, I learned everything from them.
Right. So, but it was an intention to be in upper scale place to...
I think I wanted something different than, what I had at the time, and then I was looking for, and then new job, new place to work, make my living, and it's just I think it was just lucky and then by chance.
So, which restaurant did you work?
The first place I worked, a place called Tableau's in Daikanyama, the Shibuya area.
I think that's very classic.
Yeah, it's beautiful, gorgeous decor and food, lots of wines. I learned lots of wines there. And also that restaurant has kind of attached to it was a cigar bar next door, which is called Tableau's Lounge. So where they play, they invite those singers and bassists from all over the world, that from New York or whatever, and then play live jazz there and then smoke cigar and then.
Right. So it's just beyond the restaurant. It's more like a concept or lifestyle kind of place. Right. And there is a bar.
Yes. And then eventually Shinkawa-san left the restaurant and they opened up his own place. So I followed him. So that's where a place called Dazzle in Ginza. And I worked there until I moved to New York.
Right. So what kind of a place was the Dazzle restaurant?
It's great. The contemporary... I would say contemporary cuisine. Mm-hmm. So, you know, all these ingredients, the freshest ingredients come from neighbors and like a local neighboring prefectures of Tokyo. And take that and then using these classic Italian French techniques to make it delicious and beautiful.
Right. And well, Japanese, French and Italian known for being so classic, even more than people say, more than the back in the real country. So, right. And so the style of the cocktails you made in Japan, that's more sort of authentic kind of styles?
Yes, very classic drinks. That. So I started working that restaurant as a food runner. So running food, learning about the food, and everything is from zero to, you know, to that high expectation. And yeah, I learned the from everything is from scratch. That I had a great sensei there. Sensei, that in Japanese word that like teacher.
I think it's beyond. I think sensei, when it's sensei, teacher plus lots of respect.
Right, right. Yeah, exactly. Like a mentor. So they were so patient that, you know, at the first place, like, you know, teaching me that all these techniques, the stirring and shaking. And so, you know, learned a lot of the recipes for the classic cocktails that, you know, people drunk there.
Right. So I'm curious, you know, the Japanese cocktails tend to be, you know, we talk about more later, but it's more technical based, right? Very precise kind of measurement and styles.
Right. I think Japanese people are something really good at, like, you know, being precise and, you know, being on time.
Right. So pretty meticulous. Obsessive people. Right. Okay. What do you think you learned at each place?
So again, that the classic techniques and, you know, expanding the knowledge of the recipes, that the classic recipes, and that time, like, you know, like late like 90s and early 2000s, to me, well, of course, the internet was there, but like it wasn't enough like resource to learn.
You cannot
deeper,
just open an iPhone and look up the recipes.
Deeper knowledge of history of the drinks per se, but you know, the what the sidecar is and how to make Manhattans.
Mm.
And I think one of the greatest thing I learned was ice carving. So there's, again, my sensei, Antonio-san. He's still there. He's been there like over 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
Show me how to carve ice balls and how to
make it.
At
the tableau?
Yeah, actually, tableaus. My sensei was a Yas-san.
Mm-hmm.
He told me how to start, how to make, you know, the drinks and also ice balls as well. And then sometime, you know, after closing at the restaurant, and then, you know, because the cigar bar was open till late, so I needed extra cash. So
okay.
A few nights I worked there. Then Antonio-san was my sensei.
Interesting. So it sounds like, you know, we want to talk about the difference between Japanese and American cocktail culture, but it sounds like, really, you have a sensei at really established places.
Yeah, I'm lucky. Yeah, I have a great sensei everywhere.
Because you're a good student.
Thank you.
Eventually, so like you said, you came to the States after you worked at a certain time at the two restaurants. And so where did you work in the U.S.?
In the U.S., I worked, first place was in the West Village. Called Kingswood.
Mm-hmm.
So owned by Australian people, lovely people.
Right.
And I also worked at Ruby's Cafe in Nolita. So I made lots of coffee over there. And then after that, I joined the Saxon Pro.
How come?
I met Naren Young through my friend Paulie, Paul Frontage. He was a brand ambassador for 40 Spill of Vodka from New Zealand. So it's just amazing that how I ended up get to know all these really important people in my life. So I knew Tom, who was brand ambassador for that same brand in Tokyo. So I told him that, hey, I'm moving to New York. And then he goes like, all right, so I'll put you guys in touch. So I landed it, started going to school, and then, you know, Tom put us in touch, and then the Polly goes like, hey, let's catch up, let's go have coffee. And then I met Polly, and basically he looked after me like his little brother. And then he eventually introduced me to Kenta-san, Kenta Goto, the owner of Bar Goto.
Right.
So Kenta-san, I met Kenta-san first, and then he was, as you know, like very generous, amazing guy.
Right.
Took me to a few bars, and
yeah. So by the way, so for listeners who doesn't know about Kenta came to a show. I forgot the number of the episodes, but so basically he was the head bartender at the Pegu Club, which is one of the best bars in the whole country or in the whole world.
Right.
So
yeah, sorry. The long story short, I met Naren through Paul, and then.
So Naren was working at Saxon.
No, actually, the first time I met Naren, he worked at the Bobo.
Okay.
Bobo in the West Village, which is a few streets down from the Kingswood, where I worked. And then, you know, years later, actually, Naren opened the Saxon Pro in 2011. Mm. And a few months later, I met him at some sort of events, and he invited me to, hey, come over, buy you a drink, and then I stopped by, and then,
right.
Yeah.
It's, I feel kind of jealous, because it sounds like all those cocktail people really connected in the whole, like, globally.
Very, very small world.
Right. That's very nice. And so among those people, who's your sensei, your mentor?
Again, many. Shinkawa-san, Hiroshinkawa from Japan. It's not exaggeration, but like people call him God of Service.
Oh, wow.
He's quite big and big-hearted, amazing person. So, and then moved to New York. And I mean, of course, like not only Shinkawa-san, just there's so many other people. Asai-san, John-san, Shoko-san. I was very lucky to be there, and then at that very particular time, that those amazing people worked there.
Right.
And then they taught me so many things working in the restaurant and hospitality. And of course, moved to New York, Naren Young and Lyndon Pride. So they basically they're the founder of Saxon Pro Beverage Program,
right.
And they will be my sensei for a long time. And I mean, mentor that like who you know sort of like inspires you. So like you know that's in a sense that Nacho, my best friend Nacho's there, working you know,
Nacho
working
works
closely, and then you know someone like him, they're making drink every single drink with heart, you know, his heart and you know that's and then. He's just his personality that something makes everyone happy, you know. And then, so someone like him, and of course,
right. So Nacho basically he works at the Daily, which is your sister restaurant bar.
That's right. Yeah, he's got the new place that we can talk about that later. Yeah, and then it's just everyone that I'm lucky to have these friends and very close. Patrick. Del Punta, he's co-owner of a restaurant called Sweetwater, which is in the Williamsburg.
Right. So it sounds like you have almost like a family tree of all those friends. And right. So, you know, all those really good people to learn out of whatever they told you about, or you just learn how they do. So how do you describe the difference between Japanese and American cocktail culture?
That's a hard question. Right?
That's why I'm asking you. You know the best.
I think I can't say that I have a lot of experience because I worked in a restaurant I had a very intense time working in restaurant and the bar. I think it's the cocktail culture the word culture that involves people, right? The cocktail culture. I think cocktail culture is, you know, basically, you know, in the bar or the restaurant, and having a great time with good people, and then drinking delicious things. That's the cocktail culture, if that's the definition of the culture.
Right.
And, you know, I don't know. It's hard to describe.
Right. So, for instance, you know, whenever I go to bars in Japan, I feel I have to behave right. But cocktails are precise, and you know exactly what to expect.
Right. If you focus on the drink, the cocktail culture, if you focus on the drink, if you have exact same ingredients, and then you know the technique, if you have a recipe, and you can make, you know, pretty much exactly the same taste of the cocktail, like, doesn't matter where you're in Japan, New York, Moscow, doesn't matter, but I think what makes so different, like tastes so different, is about, I think, atmosphere and how these staff of the bar and the restaurant makes you feel. So that's a great factor. And then through my experience that worked in Japan, I learned so much about, you know, of course, not only making drinks, but again, the hospitality point of view that, you know, and then moved to New York that, I learned the different part, like, kind of.
Right, so, you know, like, say, if I was a fresh bartender and go start working at a Japanese bar versus here, what's the difference, like, you know, on a daily basis?
It's just that New York is a very special place. You know, everyone's from everywhere, you know, so. And it's just amazing that, like, this New York City sounds, like, so big and, you know, everyone thinks, like, oh, it's huge. But, like, it's such a small town and, you know, filled with the good people. And everyone's from everywhere, which means, you know, they bring each own culture to this place. And then just inspiration is, I think, Tokyo has so many great restaurants and bars and, you know, cocktail bars. And so as in New York. But the different experiences, what surrounds you and who surrounds you. So Tokyo is, of course, an international city, but mostly Japanese people.
Right. So is it wrong to say, not accurate to say that, you know, Japanese bars tend to follow classic recipes versus here, you know, the creative things encouraged?
Yeah, I'm sorry that I can't answer the exact question that, you know, you're, like, people looking for, but... yeah, it is a different experience in New York, you know, very exciting and, you know.
Yeah, like, for instance, Gen Yamamoto, who used to work here and went back to Japan, he opened the bar, which is one of the most popular and well-recognized bars in whole country now. So, and obviously he started using fresh, you know, fruit juice and stuff, and it's an American influence. I'm sure it's the things that are changing in Japan too. But, you know, like, one of the things people really talk about, like you mentioned already, is the hand-carved ice, right? So why did you learn, like, really, we have to practice over and over to make a hand-carved ice in Japan?
Right. It's not a hard thing to do.
Really?
To me. But if I can do it, anyone can do it. So... you know, like, just takes time, and then, you know, the make, you know, ice for tens and hundreds of ice for every day, and then for a long time we get to make them really nice.
What's the good ice to carve?
At Saxon we're getting ice from Richie Boccardo's 100 Weight. He makes amazing, beautiful ice. And what we do is just, like, you know, of course, we have a storage area that the freezer specifically keep the you know, the delivery of lots of ice slabs.
But I'm talking about, you know, when you carve, you're taught to carve ice, right?
Oh.
So what's the purpose, in a way? What's the point of carving ice?
So,
by
again,
hand?
The ice ball, the story of ice ball comes in, like, lesser surface area and then lesser dilution.
Right.
And again, temperature of the ice is as well, that it's not like, and then density of the water, density of the frozen water, so that which makes whatever the fluids you put in, water or whiskey, or melts slower, which means you can enjoy the, I mean, not saying that dilution is bad for the drink, but Yeah, keep it nice and cool,
right.
And lesser dilution.
Right.
Sometimes,
and it's a density also. In the first place, ice has to be really densely frozen, and then it kind of more crystal, right? Because there's not air bubbles inside.
Right, right, exactly.
Right.
So transparent.
Yeah. Like crystal.
Yeah.
Right.
Make it taste better.
But I'm curious, that how do you, you know, when you make a cocktail on the rock or something, whatever, you know, the style is, you have to really calculate the time ice melts, right?
Exactly.
How do you do that?
Experience, I guess. You know, but mostly attention. Just, you know, keep in your mind that, you know, whatever you put in, it's going to start melting. So you have to make it faster.
Okay. Yeah. So, wow, it's very, you have to be very kind of strategic, right? Okay. So the Saxon Pearl was named the Best American Cocktail Bar Spirited Award at Tales of the Cocktail, which is the world's biggest annual cocktail event. And that's last year, 2016. So congratulations.
Thank you very much.
And the cocktail menu at Saxon Pearl is very unique and fun. So what is your philosophy in developing cocktail menu?
So the philosophy of cocktail, what we serve at Saxon Pearl, which is Naren Young and Lyndon Price philosophy, and something I learned very closely from them. So our drink is always classic cocktail influenced, inspired cocktail, sorry, the classic cocktail inspired drinks, but with loaded with lots of local seasonal ingredients and innovative ideas and authenticity. So seasonality, like we start talking about like lots of seasonality, but like these days I kind of like to use locality, because you know the season, when you travel around, every different parts of the world has different climate, different seasons. So I think it's cool that like engage into local things. This is super cool, especially, you know, when you travel, like came from, if you go to somewhere, you want to taste something local, which is more, because you can't taste it in New York.
Right.
So yeah, in a sense, but yeah, so.
So is there any room for you to kind of incorporate Japanese cocktail culture mindset on your menu?
Mindset, yes, I think so. It's not only about ingredients, but more mindset, like, for example, like respect your tools, respect your ingredients. Speaking of how we can maximize these ingredients instead of, you know, squeeze something in and throwing away, but okay, what we can maximize is, you know, a piece of, you know, the crap.
Like lemon peels.
Yeah, lemon peels to little tip of something and vegetables and anyhow, but at the respect your tools, respect your...
What do you mean by respect your tools? Like go clean often?
That we... Each bartender at Saxon, they bring their own tools to
like
work.
Like chef's
knives, exactly. Right. So, yeah, respect your tools, in which, you know, eventually that's going to reflect to your drinks, delicious drinks as well.
Okay. So one of the most interesting menu items, I think, to me, is a Japanese highball, which is made with Yamazaki 12-year Perrier and lemon oil. And Yamazaki, which is the most iconic Japanese whiskey in the U.S., and it's really hard to get right now. So what's the idea behind this cocktail?
So Japanese highball, like today, like people love highballs and making lots of these lesser ABV cocktails and refreshing drinks, aperitifs. Japanese highball, essentially, it is whiskey and soda.
That was a keyword, like a really buzzwords, and like, I don't know, like 3-5 years.
Right. But what's so different, just where we make it, the way we make it. So we get the glass, highball glass, and we're going to hand carve, hand chisel these, you know, ice from a big ice block that fits perfectly into the glass.
Right.
And we stir that to, you know, bring the temperature of the glass down. Then we add, and then we drain it because, you know, extra water is going to stay in the glass. So we're going to drain that. And then we're going to top it off with sufficient amount of ice again, because, you know, the ice is going to melt in the water that, like, you know, top of the level of the ice goes down. So that we're going to fill that. We're trying to pack the glass with ice as much as we can. So again, another freshly, you know, chiseled or carved ice goes in. Then we pour the whiskey in. Stir down a little bit, because the whiskey, to bring down the temperature of the whiskey. Then we carefully add a soda water to it. Then make sure that the soda is not like pour over the ice, because that's going to kill the bubbles. Right. So like to the gently to the gap on the side, pour that soda, Perrier in, which has beautiful, tiny, fine bubbles. And then after that, you gently put your bar spoon in, kind of lift up the, you know, ice from the bottom to gently stir. Garnish with the lemon oil, the freshly peeled lemon skin. And now it becomes no longer just only the whiskey soda. This is the Japanese highball.
Interesting. Because it's such a high quality whiskey, and then adding some sparkling texture.
Right.
That must be really interesting.
Yeah. I can't lie. So we started using Yamazaki 12, and then over the time, it got so expensive because everyone loves it. Now we use the Toki. Also from Suntory, the Japanese whiskey, the younger blend, makes a really nice Japanese highball.
Yeah, it's just released like last year, right?
Delicious.
I haven't tasted it, so maybe I'll come and see you soon. Okay, and well, by the way, we have an interesting program at Saxon Parole called Cocktail Cabinet Program. And so what is it, and how did you come up with this idea?
So Cocktail Cabinet Program at Saxon Parole. So this is not my idea. I know how that works, but again, this is Nara and Linden. So when they traveled to Japan, what they saw was, you know, you walk into your neighborhood bar or, you know, izakaya, or even izakaya. So what you see behind the counter is the bottle of shochu and whiskeys and with the name tags on, or sometimes, you know, like the name written on the bottle, or like sometimes the place fancy that has a metal, there's like neck tag that dangling from the, you know, the bottle that say, you know, Akiko-san, for example. So, and it's amazing, you know, the loyalty program to, you know, that the one guest keep coming back for that bottle, and then, you know, to the restaurant. So that, and they, you know, now taking that, the, you know, took the idea to, you know, what we can do that, that space, and which something specialized, which was a cocktail. So, let's do the monthly changing cocktails.
In Japan, we call it the bottle keep.
Bottle keep.
So it's like, I've seen, I've been traveling and in Japan, and I see, oh, wow, they're, you can see they're really regulars. That means it's a good place to be.
Yeah, to us, it's very special program, because the, again, the, it's not about just only keeping the bottle and then, you know, but it's about, you know, bartender knows how he likes to drink, you know, the Akiko-san likes on the rocks, and Akiko-san's friend comes in, hey, introduce, this is masa, oh, I like, actually, can you make it on the rocks, I mean, highball. So next time I go in, they recognize me, and then, you know, they, without asking me, that they make highball just straight up, and then here you go. In front of me, there's a highball. So again, that at Saxon Pro, the cocktail cabinets is great, that these industry or just in general, like neighborhood people keep coming back, and, you know, bartender, you know, we know their name, first name basis, and, you know, it's cool to kind of share that you know, that hospitality with them. So
bottle keep in Japan tend to be, can be anything, shochu or whiskey.
Right.
But in your case, you have cocktail.
Cocktail of the month. Is, yeah, every month. Every month, different cocktails.
I've never heard of it. It's amazing. So, okay. So anybody can ask for it as far as you pay in advance. That's the program. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So it's a Saxon Pearl Cocktail Cabinet Program. All right. So let's take a quick break here. And when we come back, we'll talk about how Masa won the Global Chef's Master in 2014 and how he became one of the best bartenders of the world. So please stay with us.
Today's program is brought to you by Korin, supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. Korin is proud of their Japanese culture and traditions, but they want you to know that their products are not just for Japanese restaurants. Their knives and tableware bring out the best qualities of food from every culture and fit into every restaurant, from French to Pan-Asian to American, and that is why they're located in New York City, where people from every country in the world come to eat. Korin's unique store in Lower Manhattan is home to perhaps the most extensive collection of Japanese chef knives in the world, including Japan, plus the rarest natural sharpening stones and exquisitely designed tableware. They also host special events such as knife sharpening demonstrations and parties with New York's most famous chefs and restaurateurs. Korin is dedicated to this ideal, bringing the implicit and elegance of Japanese culture to your table, be it in your home or in the finest restaurant. For more information, visit korin.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japan Eats, broadcasting live from a studio in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm your host, Akiko Katayama, and my guest today is Masahiro Urushiro, who is a mixologist and bar manager at the Saxon Barrel, which is a great new American restaurant in East Village. So you were crowned the Global Chivas Master in 2014, which is an annual award given by Chivas Regal, a highly recognized Scotch whiskey company. So what was the theme of the competition?
So theme of the competition, so Chivas Masters is, of course, it's a Chivas Regal. And the first cocktail competition in that company, within that company. Max Warner, he's the one who is now international brand ambassador for Chivas, and he created this cocktail competition to, you know, to share great things about this, you know, the bartending cultures and people. So the theme of the competition was, say, when was the last time you created classics? Especially the Chivas Regal has, you know, like a long history. And actually Chivas 25 was the very first luxury whiskey in the world and launched in actually New York City. So he made a global final in New York. That was a set. And then we were asked to make four different drinks, but again, engaging to the classic and the history of that. And then they ask us to make four drinks, but four drinks inspired by four different eras of great cocktail time.
So that's challenging.
Yeah, the first one was that so you have to create the classic era, which is that up to late 1800s to early 1920s before the prohibition. And then another one was sort of after the World War II era. So everyone came back to from different parts and then, you know, brought so many different culture back to U.S. And then another one was the disco era, which is so much fun. And then the last one was the modern age, which is pretty much what we do today. So each drink, the kind of different bartenders, you know, from all around the world. But like
how many countries?
13.
Wow.
So each one's kind of interpretation of the history and the plus the cocktail, something means to you. And then it was amazing.
Wow. So what kind of cocktail or cocktails did you make?
I made throughout the competition, I made many drinks. Mm-hmm. So there were seven different challenges, I guess, to go through. You know, to be fair to everyone, that each challenge only revealed right before the challenge. So no one could really, you know, prepare, you know, oh, I'm going to make this for this, you know, particular challenges. You know, but you have so many ideas. But I made some good drinks and lots of mess. But
what do you survive at the end? Right. So was there anything your Japanese mindset in the cocktail?
I'm not sure if that was my Japanese mindset. But again, the sensitivity to the season that we had. It was in the springtime. It was a local final. And then, you know, early spring, it was a global final. So something, you know, the seasonal. So I picked the chamomile as kind of centerpiece of the drink. And then I added that to classic drink, which is called Opal.
made out of rye, dry vermouth, and Campari.
Mm.
You know, everyone loves that kind of drink. And then that's a classic drink from introduced, you know, you can find that classic recipe in like early 1900s cocktail book. And then, so I took that and then replaced that with a Chivas Regal.
Mm.
12 years of beautiful floral whiskey. And then Campari, which I infused that with dry chamomile tea.
Mm.
And here comes the vermouth. So I kept the authenticity of the drink and then the classic.
Mm.
But add a little bit of chamomile salt, a little bit of chamomile mist, and fresh chamomile for the guys. So lots of chamomile. It sounds like too much chamomile, but actually it's delicious. Good drink.
Right. I want to try that. Definitely.
Okay.
Right. So, you know, all those things, you just picked the four eras. They picked four eras. And, you know, it's a progression, right? And how do you see, like, you know, I think even at the Tales of Cocktails, I think people talk about Japanese bartenders and sometimes they're invited. So how do you think Japanese cocktail culture is influencing the modern cocktail world?
I'm not sure if I can answer the question again. I'm sorry that... But something I like about Japanese cocktail culture, or what I see today, is that, for example, the tools, you know, like in Japan, we make beautiful tools, you know, like starting from knives and, of course, but the cocktail tools as well.
I'm curious, what kind of is this?
And, you know, the people, what many bartenders in the world love to use is, they enjoy using is a Japanese jigger.
Okay.
So, you know, it's, again, the Japanese jigger, that name suggests that, like, precisions and, you know, that the quality of materials and something you can take pride in, that using these
beautiful
tools.
So easy to handle, the kind of...
Yeah. I'm not saying that about, like, more expensive ingredients, the more pricier tools is better. No, it's not. But it's about, like, kind of, you know, the quality, that the attention to these kind of small things and... And then I think it's a great thing.
Right. I mean, it's just a really stupid example, I think. But, you know, it's like good nail clippers, like tweezers. It's like a real thing. They really make a big difference.
Exactly. And then actually, so like again, like we met, like always kind of use a craft, you know, that I looked up the in dictionary right here, the craft.
Mm.
So say craft says, so hold on, craft.
That's the keyword in the culinary and then
right. So, okay, so noun, it says an art, trade, or occupation requiring special skills.
Mm.
And, yeah, it says an art. So I think these things that kind of influence, you know, precisions and respect and attitudes and to make good drinks.
Mm. Right, because it's not just about the result of something in a glass, right? You really have to think about every element, ingredients, to how you feel when you're being served. And even like, I think when you serve the cocktail to me, you put the napkin, and the way you put the glass, that was very soft and really meant
gentle.
Something gentle.
Very gentle.
Yes. So that's called hospitality to me. So, yeah. Okay. So what do you think about the current bar culture? You know, like, in America, they're always waiting bars in restaurants. But in Japan, it's almost impossible to find one unless you go to very specific Western-style places. And you work at a great restaurant and bar place. Mm-hmm. So what do you think about that?
I think that explains... I can explain a little bit about that. I think so many places traditionally in Japan has... the place serves something, you know, like specialize in something. For example, say, of course, there's a sushi restaurant, like sushi place.
Mm.
It's specialized in sushi. All their heart and then the tensions go to the sushi.
Mm.
And then, you know, no places like serving pasta, for example, like serving pasta and then appetizer, risotto, and the main course that you have, like, say, steak and, you know, other things. And, you know, but in Japan, I think many places specialize in something, like, for example, like this place go for okonomiyaki, and then this place you go to yakitori.
Right.
And then, and a sushi place. And the cocktail bar, of course, the beautiful cocktail bars there, all the focus is in the craft of the cocktail, you know, these cocktails. But I'm not saying that, but each place has their own you know, drinks and beverage that something complements to the, you know, cuisine. Mm. So like, you know, from sushi place, they have great, you know, the sake, shochu.
Right.
Go to the yakitori place, they serve amazing highball, you know, that they could be based with whiskey, I don't know, umeshu.
Mm.
So something complements their cuisine. So,
I think, you know, the American cocktail culture is really thriving because it's more available, you know, than if you go to a restaurant, I mean, in Japan. Who starts drinking cocktails? Because there's no access, right? People think about the wine or sake or beer, but and the restaurants don't come up with creative cocktails because there's no demand. So it's kind of, to me, I wish Japanese restaurants started to serve more cocktails at this little place that you can sit at and then drink bar, you know, bar drinks, because it's more creative. And this really, I respect cocktail culture. And, you know, that's all those... close camaraderie, like friendship, you know, I think that's something to be not missed.
I love you know, the, you know, the, again, the drinking and, you know, eating with the good people and have a great time. So, you know, that I think also cool to have like that kind of culture still today is, which is, you know, go to this specific bar for the drink, you know, and then go to eat specific food at this favorite place, and then kind of go back to, you know, this bar and to drink whiskey or another, you know, like something they specialize about. So that's kind of super cool. And then hopefully these places, like, kind of, you know, that are close enough to walk around, so that way you don't have to take cab or drive, and but that kind of creates the neighborhood as well. You know, that you know,
interesting. Yeah. Right. So maybe there should be more bars and maybe something, somewhere more or less formal as well.
Right.
In Japan. Yeah. By the way, where do you go? Which bars do you recommend for our listeners when you
could? In Japan?
Yeah.
Many. many. The for sure, the my sensei Antonio-san's place, still there. He's still there in Daikaima called Tableau's Lounge. And then walking distance from there, my friend Toshi, he's bartender at a place called Diaz, also in Daikayama, the tequila tequila focused bar. And Bar Trench in Ebisu, and then of course Great Ginza area, the amazing classic Japanese, this cocktail bar, the Ueno-san's new High Five, Star Bar, Hoshi-san's Star Bar, Little Smith.
That's in Ginza.
Ginza, yeah.
Right.
Just too many.
Maybe you can give us like 10 and then put it on the show notes.
I will.
Right? That'd be fun, because I keep getting asked recommendation for restaurants in Japan, and I have to come up with something. So bar version, we'll start with your list.
Okay.
Right. Okay. So thank you for joining us today.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
Keep us posted.
Okay.
Okay. So listeners, if you'd like to know more about Masa's cocktails, please go to saxonandperol.com. That is Saxon and Perol, P-A-R-O-L-E.com. And if you have any questions or comments about the show or suggestions for guests or topics of the show, please contact us at JapanNeeds@HeritageRadioNetwork.org. And Japan Needs is live at 3 p.m. on Mondays and always available at HeritageRadioNetwork.org, iTunes, and the Stitcher podcasts. And please go to iTunes and Stitcher and subscribe to Japan Needs. And today's show was made possible by Corin, and our engineer is David Tatasiore. And thank you for listening. I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.